It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter, brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and I certainly hope this morning my reception holds up. I'm at my mobile WGN studio. My mobile WGN studio is coming to you from southwest of Calgary, Alberta, as I am in transit this morning on the way to a hunting field. So please, those of you listening who want to go hunting, duck hunting in this case, so we'll see if this holds up. It's new technology, and we're trying it. I am actually only about 25 miles north of the U.S. border, north of Glacier, so I'm in the very southwestern part of Alberta. But this is not going to be a travelogue, at least not to start with. Rather, I'm going to jump right in. It came out of this week's Association of Fish and Wildlife annual convention, which was actually held in Calgary. And the what came out of the convention or conference, which is it's not big news, it's been sitting around for a while, but it's news in the fact that people are now paying attention to it. And that is what you simply can call ballot box biology. And it was discussed at great length. There are now 24 states in America that can set wildlife regulations based upon amendments that are put on the ballot. And fish and game agencies across the country are completely have no ability whatsoever to stop these initiatives. And there's one brewing in Colorado, which is to stop bear hunting. It's an initiative that is written to say that bear hunting is cruel and inhumane, and it needs to be stopped. The Department of Natural Resources or Fish and Game in Colorado is unable to comment on any resolution that is put on a ballot. Somehow, when these referendums were unable to be put on ballots, they came with the condition that you cannot. If you work for the state of Colorado in the Department of Natural Resources, you are not allowed to comment on these referendums. So it is a completely stacked deck. And why do we even have, I've talked about this for years, keep coming up, and it's coming up more and more, greater damage to wildlife management. Why do we have trained wildlife and fishery biologists and scientists if we're just simply going to turn things over to referendum to let organizations like the Humane Society and PETA and others push through things that have nothing to do with good wildlife management, which actually are a detriment to wildlife management, but that get approved on the ballot, and then they become law. And in California, you know, you can't hunt mountain lions, you can't hunt bears. They got all kinds of problems in areas of California because of overpopulation of both of those species. Colorado's on the same track. Other states are on the same track. And I guess the question really this morning and into the future is, when are we going to stop this ballot box biology? It is destroying the future of wildlife management. We're letting an ever urbanized society, or in this case, an actually completely urbanized society, decide whether or not certain species should be able to be hunted. Hunting is a form of wildlife management. It's a very important form in some species. If we didn't have deer hunting or elk hunting, we would have incredible overpopulations of both species. We would have an absolutely profound amount of car accident increases. All those kinds of things would occur if we didn't have hunting of certain species. And yet we have ballot initiatives taken by the public that are not trained in wildlife management. They're not scientists. And here I am, the host of the Great Outdoors Show, and have been for 23 years, spent most of my career in the outdoors. I'm not a trained scientist or a trained biologist. I may have opinions that are based upon years of experience, but I'm not a professional in the field. Imagine what you do when you put a referendums on ballots and have millions of people who've basically never been outside of city limits decide whether or not we should have seasons on certain game animals. It's simply going to end up being the destruction of what we call wildlife management as we know it in America. And it is being led by anti-hunting organizations with very slick campaigns. There's no campaign by conservation groups to have hunting go forward. In fact, it's actually the opposite. The hunting groups and conservation groups have no agenda when it comes to hunting. They are in the habitat business of securing habitat or fisheries for wildlife and fisheries. They're not in the business of politics. One organization, the International Order of Teddy Roosevelt, is a organization, or Theodore Roosevelt, I guess technically, IOTR. They are going around the country trying to create constitutional amendments that will make hunting and fishing a constitutional right of individual states. Well, that's not going to do any good, because even if you have a constitutional right to hunt or fish, what happens if state agencies aren't allowed to manage for hunting and fishing? If the population of those states, through referendums, or if not referendums, through simply the lack of interest of a population, decide we're not going to have a pheasant season this year because we don't have the funding to provide habitat for public hunting. We don't have enough law enforcement officers. So even though there's a constitutional right in our state that says you can hunt, there's not going to be a deer season because we actually just don't have the ability to control it. That is coming. So the notion that just because states pass constitutional amendments to secure the future of hunting and fishing in their states is completely hollow, because if they aren't funded, if the departments aren't funded, if seasons aren't opened, then there's not going to be any hunting in those states, regardless of what the Constitution says. You can have the constitutional right to hunt, guaranteed, but there's no guarantee they're going to open the deer season or open the elk season or open the bear season, open the mountain lion season, et cetera, or maybe someday they're not even going to open the dove season, or they're not going to open the duck and goose season. This is where we're headed when we allow non-scientists, non-biological interests to manage our natural resources. And I'm afraid, based upon what I heard in Calgary, there's a lot more coming in that arena. We are facing ever-increasing pressures. Washington State now has a Fish and Game Commission that is moving away from wildlife management. It actually has some commissioners in the Fish and Game or Conservation Commission who don't believe we should have any hunting. How does a state permit individuals to go on boards of importance when their views are diametrically opposed to what those boards are supposed to be doing? In Illinois, for many years, many of you may remember, because I've mentioned from time to time, I served on the Illinois Conservation Board under three different governors in Illinois, going back to the beginning with Jim Edgar, and then under Governor Ryan, and then under Governor Rauner. So three different administrations. I served on the Conservation Board, and during that time, I saw the Conservation Board move from a board that was steeped in the heritage of hunting and fishing and the perpetuation of hunting and fishing in Illinois to a board that a lot of people had no interest in hunting and fishing. There certainly were members that did, but a board that was much more concerned about bike trails and horse trails and state parks. And all that's fine, but the core reason that board exists is to ensure that we have wildlife management in Illinois. And yet people are placed on the board who don't have those kind of abilities. So it's something that's happening nationally. It's happening in Illinois. And any state that thinks that they're immune to it, and I have friends in the Deep South who say, well, they're never going to have a situation where hunting and fishing aren't the primary activities. I'm afraid, my friends, you're kidding yourselves. It is coming everywhere. And if it can come to a state like Colorado, which it is right now on the ballot box initiatives, which is a state steeped in the tradition of wildlife management and hunting and fishing, it can come anywhere. So as I leave Calgary, and fortunately I'm down in the Southwest, which I'll talk about in just a moment, of Alberta, but as I leave Calgary and coming from the Association of the North American Association of Wildlife Agency Directors, clearly it's on their mind. They don't know what to do about it, but it's happening. I'll be back in just a minute with much more on the Great Outdoors Show. And when I do, I'm going to come back with a little bit about Southwest Alberta, an absolutely stunningly beautiful place until you have to look at windmills. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here. And as I said at the beginning of the show, I hope you'll be able to hear me throughout, or we got a problem, because I am in the remote regions of southwest Alberta on my way to hopefully find a stubble field full of feeding mallards in a couple of hours. It's only 4 o'clock in the morning here. So we've got 3 hours till daylight and cell service is very weak. But I did want to comment on life in southern Alberta. It's absolutely beautiful. If you love the wide open prairies, if you believe in just all the things that come with the great outdoors, incredible fishing, spectacular bird hunting, tons of wildlife. And yet I say that, and you come over a hill and you're looking at the Rocky Mountains in front of you, and it's spectacularly beautifully beautiful. And you come over the hill, and there they are. Wind farms to the horizon. How can it be? Here we are in a part of the province that has basically no population. I don't think there are 3,000 people in all of southwest Alberta. You're only 25, 30 miles north of the U.S. border in Glacier National Park. And you come through these tiny little towns, and they all have signs up, no wind farms here. The epic vistas of the Rocky Mountains on the wide open prairie, and at night you see nothing but flashing, blinking red lights in some places. Is this the coming of the future of North America and our quote-unquote clean energy? I certainly hope not. And I, as I've said often, I'm a fan of doing whatever we can to have energy efficiencies. I'm a fan of everything possible to reduce our carbon imprint, but it doesn't seem to make sense to me. You take some of the most beautiful landscapes in this continent, and I've said it before on other areas I've been, and you come over horizons that should be to the next horizon, hills to the next horizon, and there they are, windmills blinking at you or spinning, and that the toll on birds is profound. And I mentioned last week, if you're going to put an oil well or a gas well in or something, all the environmental permits you have to go through. How is it possible these wind farms can be put up in major migratory bird corridors? And they don't just kill migratory birds. They are wicked on raptors. And you're seeing in Alberta, as I've seen driving the country, just the effect of that. First of all, it alters bird migrations. Birds don't want to go through these blinking red-eye cities at night. And they get chopped up by the windmills. And during the day, birds try to fly through them, particularly, as I said a moment ago, raptors, and they don't make it. So we have a sincere problem with the permitting of wind farms in areas on this continent where there are large concentrations of migratory birds. And southern Alberta, southwestern Alberta, is a big example of exactly that. It's a major migratory bird corridor, and yet we're putting up wind farms as far as you can see. So it's not just in America. In fact, I think it's actually much worse in Canada than it is in America. It's not in my backyard concept, because very few people live here. But the people living in southwest Alberta, they don't want any part of this. And there's signs all over saying they don't. However, looking at the landscape, it appears pretty clear that they're losing. So before I sign off for the day, I do have to tell you a little bit of a story about going into the mountains to go fishing. Fall colors are absolutely spectacular. Here we are in late September in Alberta, and it is just, well, actually the beginning of October to be precise, and it is just unbelievable that the aspens and the colors of the poplar and every bush is just bursting with yellow and orange colors, with in the West, we don't get the bright reds that we do in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Northern Illinois. We don't have those colors here, but every color is exploding. Yesterday was Saturday, the 30th of September. Today is Sunday, the 1st of October. So happy October, everyone. Let me be the first to wish you that. And as I prepare to sign off and find this barley field some 25 kilometers or miles from where I am, it strikes me that the Alberta prairie looks an awful lot like America would have looked many, many years ago before it was settled, with the exception that there's a whole amount of wheat being grown where there was once the short grass prairie. But the fishing streams are vibrant. The only thing that's of real concern, is aside from the wind farms, is they are in the midst of a terrible, terrible drought here in southwestern Alberta. In fact, all across Alberta. Last week I talked about the drought in Saskatchewan when I reported in from central Saskatchewan. This week, the drought is even worse. South parts of Alberta haven't had 2 inches of rain this entire year. Calgary is as dry as it's been in recorded record. All the rivers are running low. The reservoirs, in many cases, are dry. And if they don't have a big winter here, this will be probably the fourth consecutive year of bad drought in southern Alberta. And next year could be devastating to all forms of wildlife if there's not some serious precipitation this winter. And of course, the prairies are boom and bust. They're wet for a few years, and then they dry out, and then they get wet again. But this is a serious, serious drought in across the part of western Saskatchewan and all across southern Alberta. So thank you for joining me this morning. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I'll be back next week in the United States, so I hopefully won't have so much static on the line. It's great being in my mobile studio, but I look forward to being in Chicago next week and speaking to you all. And there's much more news on the Great Outdoors Show. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.